Session number 8230.
Brigadier Rathbone, take.
I was saying if these divisional commanders had managed to get their men sorted out quickly at Suvla Bay, and if the corps commander and them had realized the tremendous importance of getting troops forward and capturing the heights ahead so as to get to the narrows. That was another occasion when we very nearly might have succeeded. One would have thought seniority might have been let go then. They might have promoted a younger general who had the energy and the health to get a move on at Suvla. But no, seniority governed everything. Later on, Ian Hamilton was to write in his diary, "Thank you. Bing, Fanshawe and Maud are all flyers. Thank you very much," but it was too late when he got them. The first occasion when we might have succeeded was the question of Y Beach at Helles. This came under 8th Corps, General Anton Weston, and a force of about two battalions was landed there. Sir Ian telegraphed Hunter Weston and said, "Would you like to get any more men ashore at Y, where there was apparently no resistance?" and did not reply. So Sir Ian Hamilton cabled again, acknowledged, brackets, Lord Bobbs's wrinkle. Hunter Weston then said, "I think things are going all right. We'll leave things as they are." Well, at Y Beach, I don't know who was responsible, but there was an argument about who was in command. I do not think there was an actual commander of the force appointed. There should have been. Moreover, it wouldn't do just to put the senior battalion commander in command. There should have been an extra definite force, either a lieutenant colonel or colonel, with an adjutant and another officer to help him. And all that force had to do was to walk 2 miles against no resistance, and they'd have been in Krithia. And then, at that stage, at the very early stage, they might have taken Achibaba. Now, in my humble opinion, that force Y should have been directly under GHQ. The composition and command should have been gone into most carefully. There should have been no question about who was in command, and they should have had very definite instructions. They didn't.
What happened to you after the Gallipoli campaign?
We went to Lemnos, and we were there for a month, and trained. I remember trying my ancient Greek on a peasant once, no good.
And did you go then back to England, or?
No, far from it. No, we moved to Portside. Now here again was luxury. Shops, Simon Arts, and many others, and the, what was it, the Great Eastern Club and the something else club, which was divisional headquarters. And we had a tremendous time there. I remember our padre, Addison, who later won the BC, attending wounded under fire, complained at one church parade at Portside. On the peninsula, when you thought you might be blown to bits at any moment, my communion was crowded. This morning, I only had 6 people, 4 of whom were officers.
You say he won the VC
yes.
In Mesopotamia?
Yes. Tending wounded under fire at the Battle of Saniat.
How did you get to Mesopotamia? How did you travel there?
Oh, Well, at that time, I had my first taste of staff work, because the brigade major, one R.L. Peter, managed to get home for a fortnight's leave. The staff captain became acting brigade major, and I was selected to be acting staff captain. And after about a month at Port Said, when we reorganized, re-equipped, trained, and all the rest of it, the King's Own, one of the battalions in the brigade, King's Own Royal Lancaster, divisional headquarters and brigade headquarters, embarked on the very comfortable SS Callian to Basra from Port Said. I forget how long the voyage took. Fortnight.
And what division did you join there? What sort of division did you form?
No question of joining a new division. The 13th Division moved to Mesopotamia.
I see.
We joined the Tigris Corps there.
You then became part of this Tigris Corps.
Yes.
Am I right in thinking that was under the command of the Indian Army at that time?
Yes, you're quite right. It was known as IEFD, Indian Expeditionary Force D. And only in 1916 was it taken over by the War Office and became the Mesopotamian Expeditionary Force.
Was that a good move, do you think, when the War Office took over?
Well, yes, because, as I say in my reminiscences, a commission was appointed to investigate very bad breakdowns in the medical services and so on. And it came out in early 1916. The chairman was Sir William Vincent, who was home member of the Viceroy's Council. So it was still IEFD then. And I had cause to know about it because I was wounded on the 5th of April. And the commission were busy at Amara, where we halted. And it was partly as a result of that, the very bad organization of the medical services and other things, that the War Office took it over.
And things improved after that, did they?
Yes, but that wasn't altogether due to the fact that the War Office had taken it over. It was due to General Baud being appointed commanding chief.
He was so instrumental, you feel, in getting things organised.
Oh, yes. He went through that force from top to bottom, unearthed all sorts of scandals. I don't mean to say personally, but he instituted inquiries and cleaned up heaven knows how many messes. And then things started to improve.
So what happened to you when you arrived in Basra? Did you stay there in the port, or did you
move into the... No, we went upriver. In the SS Blot Bloss Lynch, paddle river steamer that had been there for ages, doing some sort of commercial work, I forget what. And the 38th Brigade were encamped at a place called Sheikh Saad in March 1916.
And what were you doing there? What was your task there?
Well, simply to be there, to be ready to go up to the line and take part in the attack, which was to be the last attempt to relieve Kut.
What was the position in Kut when you had arrived in that area?
Well, long before, General Townsend, I mean, this Mesopotamian campaign started in, I'm not sure it wasn't the end of 1914, when there was a question of guarding the oil wells at Awaz. And then it gradually developed and went on and on. And General Townsend got as far as Ctesiphon, miles north. Miles north of Kut. And then lines of communication became too long, too great. And he went back to Kut. And I can't remember, I wasn't there. I can't remember now, even from reading, exactly what happened. But he was... The Turks attacked in force and invested Kut. And his garrison was beleaguered in Kut-Kut-Limara. And after that, various unsuccessful attempts were made to relieve it. And the 13th Division took part in the last and unsuccessful one in April 1916.
Were you in that campaign?
But I was hit on the first day of it.
Oh, could you tell me about it? What did you know? What sort of preparations were made for that attempt to raise the siege?
Well, we took over the line at Umil Hanna, and orders were issued for an attack next day by the whole division. I forget what the other divisions were doing at the time. And relieve the garrison at Kut.
Was it just a sort of forward...
That's right, a forward attack.
Yeah. Rather than an encircling one?
Yes.
Yes. And what was your role in it? What you
well, mean? As I say, I was then acting staff captain of the brigade. But before we left Port Said, Major Peter had returned, taken over brigade major, staff captain became staff captain, but because we were overstrengthened officers, the brigadier hung on to me as sort of orderly officer and general bottle washer, you see. And it was understood I was to remain like that until after the battle. Well, I was sent on some errand in the evening, I can't remember what, and I was close by the Tigris, and suddenly got hit in the arm. It felt exactly like being hit violently with a cudgel. And I very much enjoyed a whiskey and mud. And the next day I was evacuated. So I only know from hearsay what happened after that.
So you didn't actually take part in that attack?
No. Well, yeah, when you say take part, as much as a brigade headquarters does take part.
That's all you saw of it, really?
Yes.
I
saw some troops streaming forward. As I say, we had the feeling of victory that first day.
Were horses used for that attack? Were there many horses?
It rather got me. The two other divisions in the Tigris were the 3rd Lahore and the 7th Meerut Indian divisions. Indian Army divisions. And whether there was any cavalry, there must have been. Yes, I'm sure there was, but I can't remember what they were. Sorry.
But that's not part of your picture, the cavalry.
No.
And that attack, of course, wasn't successful, was it?
Well, that attack was. The attack that was unsuccessful. I think things must have stabilised that night of the 6th. Because it wasn't, of course, big attacks take some organisation. And the big attack was against the Turks on the left bank at what was called the Sanayat position. And it was a grim failure. We lost very heavily. I've said that General Maud told General Gorringe, if you make me attack like that, you'll lose half my division for me. He was merely told to do what he was told. And he's right, did lose half the division.
What sort of care would there have been for the wounded in an attack like that? Would it have been adequate at that stage?
Well, as I was telling you, there were bad failures and breakdowns in the medical services, and those had not been put right at that time. But I can describe them fairly well from my own experience.
Oh, yes. Would you tell us what happened to you when you were wounded?
Well, it wasn't a serious wound. I was patched up by one of the regimental MOs. And then I was put on a barge, or rather a river steamer, with a barge lashed to each side, crowded with wounded, and sent downriver. Some were no doubt removed to hospital en route. I really don't know, because as far as I was concerned, we were transferred direct from that steamer to the hospital ship Takada for India, I suppose on the principle of early casualties, get them out of the way and don't crowd the hospitals for the later ones to come on.
How far was that to India? Did it take you very long to get there?
Let me see, from Basra to Bombay, 10, 15 days, I can't quite remember. 10 days, I think.
Did you have good treatment in India?
Oh, yes, India was marvellous. The boat was very nice, too. This is irrelevant, I suppose, but I won the only sweepstake of any consequence that I ever have done. We had a sweep of the minute of time. I mean, the second in a minute, that the pilot would put his foot on board of Bombay, and I drew the winning second. Well, what happened in India? The Baikala Club, one of the leading clubs in Bombay, was the yacht club and the Baikala Club. Part of it had been made available as a sort of hospital for slightly wounded officers. So I went there. My first experience of India, I was thrilled. And after that, we were asked where we'd like to go on leave. Well, knowing nothing about the country at all, I inquired. And finally, I went to Ootacamund, which is known as the Queen of Hill Stations, and had a marvellous time there for a month. It was during that time, May, that Lord Kitchener was drowned in the Hampshire. But we were made honorary members of the Ooty Club, which was one of the leading clubs in India. Somebody lent me a pony, and we had a great time.
When did you return to Mesopotamia?
Let's see, I had a month's leave, but I fell a victim to most of these illnesses, and spent some time at the base first. Then I was in hospital at Amara. I didn't finally rejoin, I think, till October, when it wasn't a very nice homecoming because there was a new commanding officer from another regiment. There were only three officers in the battalion who had been in Gallipoli.
What was the state of warfare when you returned in October 1916? Can you remember?
Well, we were still much in the same position, troops. They had been at the end of the unsuccessful attempt on Kut. And we learned that plans were going forward for a major offensive in the capture of Baghdad. And this time there was a general feeling of hopefulness, because everybody had tremendous confidence in General Moore. And he had a great plan to attack on the right bank, an enveloping movement, the Essin position, while holding on the left. And that involved a most secret little plan for throwing a bridge across the Tigris. There was a story that a young Royal Engineer officer in a bridging company was sent for to GHQ, which is a place called Arab Village. So he went there and naturally reported to the engineer in chief. He said, "Well, I never heard of you. I didn't send for you." No. So he went out. And he made various inquiries. "Mr. Witz?" "No, I don't think so." "Just a minute, I'll ask the chief of staff." "You hear? I haven't heard of it." "Just a second, I'll ask the chief." "Oh yes, I want to see Mr. Witz. Come in." Well, you know, this is General Moore. Secrecy can be carried too far, because if anything had happened to him, no one would have known anything about the plan. However, there and then, Mr. Witz, who was subsequently a teacher of mine at the Staff College, this plan about the bridge was unfolded. The Turks were still holding this very strong position on the left bank, Sanier. The position on the right bank was less powerful and could be outflanked. And the plan was to make the attack on the right bank, and including this bridge, to cross the river so as to take the Turks in rear. And it was hoped to capture prisoners on the grand scale. But unfortunately that failed, because the cavalry weren't able to carry out their mission. I don't quite know why. So the Turks retreated. Many prisoners were taken, but not on the grand scale. The Turks retreated all the way to Baghdad, and we pursued them. There was a hold-up on the River Diyala, which is a tributary of the Tigris, where the six lawyers did very well. Indeed, got a VC, Captain Reed, an MC, Lieutenant Richard Underwood, and several decorations among the rank and file. And there's a memorial there which still stands, I believe. I have a photograph of it somewhere. Anyway, Baghdad was taken, and a line was established called the Sindhia-Windhia picket line, about 60 miles north of Baghdad. What happened on the Euphrates, I've rather forgotten.
But your own position during this, what has happened to you during this?
I was in India on leave.
Again?
Well, I was badly wounded on the 15th of December. I spent some time in hospital at Basra, where I played one record over and over again. On one side was Mendelssohn's Spring Song, and on the other, Armis Gibbs. was evacuated to India on a ship called the Syria with a rather nice purser. As far as I remember, I was the only officer on it. And I had a marvellous leave at Lahore. And then I went to the Combined Infantry Depot, Bangalore, which I subsequently visited years later. And there I told you about my servant, Private Small, who welcomed me. And finally, I rejoined the battalion by going as far as... a rest camp near Baghdad. And we marched the remaining 60-odd miles. You say I must read this.
Yes. What sort of... who were under your command?
A heterogeneous bunch of people. I had this draft for my own battalion, which, as I say, contained no NCOs, and I had to appoint a lance corporal, a sort of acting sergeant major. In addition to that, I was put in command of over 200 men, in addition to my draft of Loyal North Lancashire. They came from almost every unit and corps of the British Army, including medical, ordnance, and veterinary corps, including some very senior warrant officers and non-commissioned ranks.
Did that create difficulties
for
you? It
did. Many were unused to marching. Some seemed to regard it as an affront. My only assistant was Gibson, that was a subaltern, with this heterogeneous and unwieldy body, organized as best I could. We set off on our journey, which was to be by stages of 14 miles a day, marching in the early morning.
Did you have problems with discipline with this group?
Yes, not very serious ones, because I jolly well made them do their stuff. You can imagine some of them didn't take very kindly to it.
What sort of problems would you have had, you know? Can you give me an example?
Well, one man said, I don't see why I should go on guard. I'm not used to doing on guard. I'm a veterinary sergeant, you see. I said, I'm sorry, but this is war. On an occasion like this, I've got to give everybody must be fairly treated. It's not fair to put all the guard duties on the infantry. I didn't have any real trouble.
Where were you making for? What was the position you were heading for?
Well, there was a distribution centre. South of Baghdad somewhere. For the distribution centre, whence they went there several ways. Now that would be, I think, north of Baghdad, but I'm really not very certain. I can't remember.
Had you recovered completely from your wound?
Yes.
Yes, you didn't actually tell us what your second wound was. Where were you hit?
On the left chest. Just missed the stomach. Chipped the lung. And the cable, where I sent a cable to my people, wound slight, you see. No good, because the official cable was dangerously wounded. And funnily enough, there was a surgeon in Khaki whom I'd known in Liverpool who attended to me. And later on, General Maud, with all his preoccupations, found time to come and see for himself the arrangements for evacuating the wounded. I was very proud to be recognised.
Did you have good care then, your second wounding?
Oh, yes.
In Mesopotamia?